I believe that your identity is never something that you can choose. Your identity is by definition something that is given to you.
They believe I am, you know, a gay or transgender person. I am a Democrat or Republican. This is part of my core identity and who I am going to identify as.
There's a weight on you to pick the right identity, whatever that is. There's a freedom in knowing that, no, you've been given the best possible identity. Welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast, the podcast where we discuss practical Christian living, how to build thriving communities, and to be extraordinary at the ordinary. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
Now, David, you and I have the privilege of having some pretty special two-year-olds, almost three-year-olds, or in your case, just turned three-year-olds in our life. And so we typically get to exchange some stories about some wild three-year-old shenanigans. Now, in David's case, in both these cases, these are relatives, some more direct than others. But David, you had some pretty fun three-year-old, two-year-old experiences in this last week.
Yes. So my nephew, who is 3 years old, who also I have been informed is he and his mother are regular podcast listeners. So hopefully he will be excited that I will be mentioning the fact that he is now three. It was really fun because we just recently celebrated his birthday, and you know, it's just always fun to watch how like the things that kids latch onto. And so at this particular birthday celebration, he had this, you know, his dad is very crafty and was able to create, like, use a 3D printer and make this whole like little remote control forklift gadget that was super cool. And he was really interested in that. But then when my wife and I came in and we had a Bluey balloon, that was the most exciting thing in the world to him. And he just ran around the house being very excited about that for a good like 20 minutes or so. And so I just always find that very entertaining.
Well, it's always hilarious when, you know, the kid gets this fantastic present and they play with the box. And I've seen that happen multiple times. My two about to be 3 years old very, very soon this week. Son has a very set, clear set of ideas that he's interested in every day. And so I wake up every morning and we have this conversation. Sometimes this conversation happens when I'm still in bed and he crawls into bed and kind of grabs my face and says, "Daddy, we're going to start the tractor." And I normally have to say, "No, man, we're not running the tractor today." He says, "Are we going to trim?" He's really fascinated with running the trimmer and trimming weeds and all that kind of stuff. And or he'll comment and say, "We need to mow or we need to trim," which in my house, almost always we need to mow or we need to trim. And I'm a little late on it. So there's always a little stab of guilt that goes along with that. And so I generally say, "No, I have to do something different." And then he'll say, "We gonna run the chainsaw." He really loves the chainsaw. We heat a lot with wood, and so we do a lot of chainsaw work. And so now I'm not gonna run the chainsaw. And there's always a little pause, and then he says, "So, are we going to ride the motorcycle?" and it's that process every day. And I'm talking about literally every day. Like, if I'm home and I wake up, one of the first conversations I'll have with my son in the morning is, "Are we going to start the tractor? Are we going to trim? Are we going to trim or mow? Are we going to run the chainsaw?" And, you know, if all else fails, then clearly if we're not working, we should be riding the motorcycle. By the way, just so the listeners know, Micah does not ride the motorcycle. This is not something that he's riding himself in.
It's true. So, no, he has his own ride. And funny enough, two respective little two almost 3 year olds get to interact on a regular basis on Thursday nights. And I was able to watch the other night when the two of them decided. So your son has a little tricycle that he likes to use, and a tricycle, like the pedals are kind of cool, but a lot of the times, like, that's not actually necessary, and he will just use his feet to propel himself.
Fred Flintstone. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And so my nephew decided that he also wanted to ride on the tricycle. And so he got on, you know, there's a footrest on the back. And so he got on the back footrest and just wrapped his arms around your son. And the two of them were just kind of riding around together. And my nephew was having an absolute blast. Your son was just like, fine, I guess you could hang around, sure. And so they went for a little ways, but then eventually they were started going up a little bit of an incline. And so then the both of them, because the weight was all the way at the back, took a tumble towards the back. And so they were both fine. They both found it amusing. But then your son was just like, you know what? I'm good. I'm done with this. I'm just taking off, and I don't need this extra weight on the back. My nephew, however, was very distressed about this, and so then proceeded to. There was a whole bunch of people that were all in a group, just follow your son in a circle, as your son was much faster on the wheels, and my nephew was just going in circles the entire time. And so I could just hear kind of the the old school, like the Benny Hill, like chase music going on in my head as they were just circling around and around, trying to escape or catch each other. So
just a level of chaos there. Yeah, your nephew is very into planes, and so my son is very into motorcycles, and so their conversations are hilarious because one of them is talking about planes constantly and the other one's talking about motorcycles constantly, and they're talking over each other, and they're both absolutely thrilled with it and just love the time. So,
but they do coincide on tractors. They both love tractors.
They have an intersection where they're very excited about tractors. Interestingly, if you're a two-year-old, almost three-year-old, your identity is very much tied to your ideas about what it is that you like and what it is you do. And my son's identity is very much formed by thinking that he is a tractor starting, trimming, mowing, chainsaw running, motorcycle riding dude. And that's interesting because, just in case you're worried, Micah is not running the tractor by himself, operating the trimmer, certainly not operating the chainsaw or the mower, and not riding the riding the motorcycle. And so there's a gap between those two things. And that brings us to our question today, David, which is, are your ideas your identity? And this is very much the case, perhaps, for 2 or 3 year olds, but it becomes a much more serious thing for 16, 17, and 18 year olds. And we see this in our work and as we interact with students and in the broader culture. And so the question, are your ideas your identity? David, you have a pretty solid answer to this. So let's start with the answer and then go into the details.
Well, I don't think that the listeners will be surprised when I say that the answer is firmly no. And I think that you might be wondering, okay, what does it mean for your ideas to be your identity? I think that that's a helpful place for us to start. I think that the places that we see this most often in our culture is just in the places where we see people choosing to be something in particular, and then creating their whole identity, their whole perspective on the world, their whole idea of how they should be treated, of who they are, and what their life should look like around just an idea. And so the primary ways that we see this come to fruition are through things like homosexuality and gender fluidity and transitions, is that that's just kind of the most obvious case in point, where we see people who have an idea about themselves, about who they believe that they should be, and then everything else in their life then revolves around that idea. And so what ends up happening then is that if someone is to push back against that idea that they have, against the thought that they are within their rights to promote being able to transition to a gender that is different than what they were born with, then immediately they become completely and totally offended and personally hurt. Because you're not just pushing back against an idea, you are pushing back against who that person believes that they are at a core and fundamental level. And I have such strong feelings about this, because I think this is a source of a lot of why it feels like we cannot have civilized discourse about ideas in our current modern culture, because people don't just have ideas that they think could work that are separate from their identity. They believe, I am, a gay or transgender person. I am a Democrat or Republican. And these statements of I am are not just categories that, I kind of fit into and that I generally support. They are, this is part of my core identity and who I, as like a whole individual person, am going to identify as. And so whenever you try to push back against ideas, which is essential to a healthy culture, then that becomes immediately personal, and it makes it very, very challenging to actually have any sort of constructive conversation about these things. So there's kind of my little miniature soapbox thesis on the on this, Jonathan. So I'm curious to get your thoughts.
Well, you named some of the big ones, but, you know, we see this play out in smaller ways as well. You know, my identity is a smart person. I'm a smart person. My identity is an athlete. I'm a soccer player. I'm a and it's not that you're not those things. You're not doing those things. It's that this idea becomes the identity is the essential part here. In other words, I'm deciding that. And the key thing here is I am deciding that this is who I am. And there's some interesting things here. This pressure. So when this becomes prevalent throughout a culture, then the pressure exerts itself throughout the culture, where the demand then becomes interesting that everybody must choose their identity. And I think this plays out in Christian circles, and it's a slightly different set of language. It's, you know, what is your purpose, young person? And your purpose ends up becoming your identity. And if you don't know what your purpose is, it's not just a, I don't know what to do next. It's a, I don't know who I am. I don't know where I belong. I don't know what I, you know, this whole context comes in there.
Yeah, there was a, you know, badge of honor of if you have a good life purpose statement or not in some church circles that I grew up in was a big thing.
Yeah, and you definitely have some status. If I know for sure I want to be a blank, and so your identity, your idea about what you're going to do for your career becomes your identity. It's worth noting that, first of all, this is a bit of a historical anomaly. Most places and times and cultures, and I would think even today, most cultures and times and places don't have this conflation. It's very much a Western type of problem where we have the luxury of being able to have the free time and the economic ability to make some of these decisions in a way that most people didn't. But I agree with you, David, in that this is a profoundly bad idea. Are your ideas your identity? No, profoundly no. And we should be pleased to be released from the tyranny of that concept. But then that begs a deeper question, which is, you know, what makes up your identity? And I think that one of the things that is fundamental and foundational to this discussion is that I believe not like as in I feel, this is talking about feelings. I believe as in like this conforms to reality. Like I believe in gravity. I believe in gravity. If I stop believing in gravity, I'll still, you know, trip and fall and hit the ground, hit the ground when I trip. And so this is this kind of belief. I believe that your identity is never, and that is a broad statement, never something that you can choose. Your identity is by definition something that is given to you. And it is given to you by others, and you have some but little control over what the identity is. And that can be hard, and that can be bad, and that can even be wrong. In other words, you can be given an identity by your community that is detrimental, not a good idea, not a good thing for you. And I, you know, a great example is to be like, say, the caste system in India or something like that, in Hindu society. You know, if you're giving the identity of a lower caste, then that has profound implications for your life. But as Christians, this becomes an extraordinarily powerful reality, understanding of reality. It is reality, understanding reality, because you are given an identity, and that identity is that you are made in the image of God. Now, your community might give you an identity that you may have to struggle with, that is not, that you may have to overcome, that you might have some difficulties with. There's some, because we're a fallen world, but it never supersedes this foundational identity that you've been given as a child of God, made in the image of God. And from that now flows an order and an understanding of your world and who you are that supersedes everything else and allows you to withstand even, you know, overcoming identities given to you by somebody else, and also allows you to craft, in being made in the image of God, the identity that's right and proper and good. But it doesn't come from an idea. It comes from a reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I think that that cannot be overstated enough, the fact that God giving us the identity that is in him, because that is the identity. All of those other things that we talked about are identities that will this side of eternity are only last for so long, for only last as long as we draw breath. But that identity that is given to us by our creator, that is the identity that will last into eternity. That is the one that has literally eternal implications. And so when we understand that that is the identity that we should then live our mortal days based out of, I think that it can fundamentally change how we go about things.
So when we start with that, this becomes this is kind of, you know, we could stop here and we could say you just need to focus on this. And young people in particular hear us clearly. By saying this, we are taking something away, right? You would say, well, you're taking away my freedom to choose my own identity. I'm taking away the slavery of choosing your own identity. I'm taking away the pressure of choosing your identity. I'm taking away the tyranny of choosing your own identity. And to get a little technical here, I suspect that you're not choosing as an act of free will as much as you think you are. You're responding to propaganda and outside sources and bad ideas propagated by other people that are often warping your sense of identity. And so first of all, yes, I am taking that away, but it's like taking away chains. If I take away your chains, I'm removing something, but in return, you're getting freedom. And so you have this freedom in Christ. Your identity is the best it could possibly be. There is no higher identity to be made in the image of the living God who created heaven and earth. We're talking about an expansive, amazing, you know, God says that they have made you higher, you know, the scripture says it made you higher than angels. God himself came and died for you. I mean, the layers of what it means to be made in the image of God are not only beyond what you can understand in this world, they apparently are beyond what you can understand in eternity. You're going to spend the rest of eternity really being able to grasp what it means to have that kind of identity. And in fact, eternity is available to you because of that identity. So we could stop right there and it's enough. But there is a reality that your life's, the way your life goes and to some extent, even the quality of your life day to day rests entirely on understanding this, but it also has implications for what your identity is in the community that you're in. So it's worth leaning into that a little bit and saying you are not without power in that identity, but it is true. And it's important to understand if you're going to understand how to make something with wood, you have to understand the true nature of wood, that it absorbs moisture and that it twists and bends in a certain way and different wood at different properties. Like, you have to understand how it works. And so the same thing is true here. If you have to understand identity is something that's given to you, so starting with that, and that you can rest in the peace of knowing that your most important identity, the heart of who you really are, is you're made in the image of God. But then the next step is your community gives you your identity. And so it's worth asking, well, how does that work? And one of the things that might be really helpful to lean to understand here is that your community gives you your identity, but your participation in community is almost entirely determined by your service to that community. And so how you serve others in your community, be that your church, your family, your workplace, your neighborhood, like how you serve is often the biggest determinant of how you fit into that community, and consequently the major factor and influence on the identity that your community gives you. And so we would say that even on a broad macro scale, right? For most of the people who listen, and if you're in a different category, insert your country here, you're an American. That's not something that you chose. If you're an immigrant, there's something a little bit different there. But for most of us, that means we were born as American. We were born in a certain community. If we go back a step further, you know, you have a last name. That was not something you chose. You were chose to be, you know, you didn't choose to be born to the parents you were given, but yet that forms a part of your identity. But then the perception of others about, you know, we say to serve your country, is how we measure how good of a patriot you are. I mean, patriot in a positive sense here. And so to think through that, then it is how to serve your family. You know, was this a son or a daughter who honored his or her parents? That is a measure of your service to your family. And so it's those things collectively together. It's your service to your community, however that community is defined, that often plays a major role in how the community gives you an identity. And it's important to understand that your identity is something that is given, but in a community sense, you have an opportunity to influence that by how you serve. And you can best understand that by knowing that there's something that you didn't earn by service, but was given to you as a free gift, which is your identity in Christ in terms of being made in the image of God.
Yeah. Jonathan, help me out with sorting through this a little bit, because I think that we could make some distinctions here that could help us to sort through this. So there is sort of just this core identity that we have, that is the reality that we, you know, just spent time talking about, of the fact that we are made in the image of God and that we are eternal souls that, you know, will last, you know, far beyond this mortal existence that we have. So that is just like the first level of like our identity. And especially for those of us who are in Christ, that is just like a deeper reality of that. I wonder if then we can just give another level to that, of the things that you were just talking about with the kinds of communities that you are that you're involved in and that you're serving in, which I think is an excellent way to put it. And that, you know, there's kind of the old saying of like, you are like the like, if you combine the five people that you spend the most time with, then that's, you know, kind of the summary of just like who you're going to tend to be, or just, you know, the people that you surround yourself with are going to drastically affect like who you choose to be, or like how you end up behaving. And so it helped me to find like the best words for this, because I'm almost wondering if there's like the core identity that is stable, that is unchanging, that is the eternal reality. And then there is the kind of person that we can be that will end up changing over time based on the place that we are in, the people that we are around, and just the things that we are doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that. And that distinction, I think, is important, because there's two things there. The first is one that you're given and you can't change, mm-hmm. right? Like, so being made in the image of God, you can reject that and you're still made in the image of God. It's a gravity type thing. And the second is one that is in the context of where and who you live. You know, your identity. So David, at our point in lives, we have an identity as Virginians. That is something that is an outside thing that determines some important things about us, but it's not everything about us. And in both of our cases, we moved. My case, not necessarily by choice, because I moved with my parents when I was smaller. In your case, more by choice. We moved to that place, and so there's an autonomy that comes with that. But at the same time, what it means to be a Virginian is determined less by us and more by that collective society, right? So that identity is given in that sense. We don't choose all the ideas that make us Virginian, but we do have some, you know, the way we serve our state, the way we serve our community contributes to that collective. And yet we're not under this tyranny of, you know, I get to choose what it is to be in a Virginia, to be a Virginian, and my concept of being a Virginian then becomes who I am. No, I get to choose how I serve my state and by extension my community, or maybe more up at point my community, and how I interact and run my businesses and all those kinds of things. That contributes to the collective culture of what it means to be a Virginian and American and all those kinds of things. And then ultimately I assume that identity, like that is part of my identity, but it's a collective type thing at that point, which I have some influence over, but I don't get to determine uniquely and solely by myself. Does that mm-hmm. help draw some of those lines, David?
Yeah, I think it does, because yeah, there's just elements where there's some parts of those things that you can control, and there's other parts that you can't. You know, there's you know, just the reality that you know, as a resident of Virginia, that you know, I'm not going to be able to vote in an election for a different state. You know, I'm originally from Missouri.
That
you
depends on the state, but yeah, so.
I suppose that's true. But yeah, so there's. You know, even though I feel generally like I tend to identify only just because I've only been here in Virginia for a couple of years, I tend to identify more with the state of Missouri, where I'm originally from. But that doesn't mean that I am not currently a Virginian. And so there's part of that I can control. There's part of that I can't. But I think that there's a lot of circumstances like that. And then I think there's also a lot of circumstances where you can find yourself in where you end up having a lot more control than you might think of. You know, there's, I think a lot of people tend to underestimate just how much of a difference the the messages that they are consuming on a regular basis and the ideas that they are, you know, just even if they don't aren't necessarily, you know, agreeing with them at a base level, how much those things will end up affecting you. And so, you know, you'll find a lot of interesting examples of this for people who end up spending a large amount of time in online communities and forums, who will end up just adopting very strong identities to these specific subcultures. And like, to be clear, some of them are, you know, not harmful in and of themselves, but I think that they're is circumstances where that can end up being very consuming and end up being a large part of your identity, that if you end up being able to exit out of that community, you might be surprised how much you as an individual and the ways that you think and the ways that you look at the world can change because of that. So I think that it's good to note that there's sort of different levels to this as far as how much control you have over these parts of kind of who you see yourself as and how you understand the world.
Yeah. And I, you know, coming back to there's an important statement there, is that I think in our culture and society, we incorrectly conflate how we see ourselves as what we really are. Mm-hmm. In other words, how I perceive myself is my identity, and now it gets back to the point where I can choose how to see myself. And there's actually a lot of self-help stuff, like, you know, you should self-actualize and you should, self-affirm and all those kinds of things. And those are all various forms of claiming that I define who I am. And I think that the bigger argument here is it's kind of let's use a slightly different example. We talk to our students a lot and we say, you know, one of the hard realities of becoming an adult is when you understand fully that what you don't control has more impact on your life than what you do control. Mm-hmm. But that's not the way we live our lives. We live our lives mistakenly thinking that what we do controls our lives. And we feel like there's all these things. And from a somewhat, you know, immediate, obvious, you know, day-to-day side, it feels like that a little bit. And yet it doesn't take much for that veneer to be scratched off. And you have sometimes really good things and sometimes really tragic things that happen that you don't have any control over. And you realize that, you know, there's far little less control over your life than you thought, mm-hmm. right? And there's a parallel here. In terms of, you know, we have this mistaken idea that our perception of ourself is who we are. Mm-hmm. And that is fundamentally not true. It may feel true, but it isn't really. And instead, who we are is determined first by the fact that we are made in the image of God. And then secondarily, who we are is determined much more by these outside forces, these things that we don't choose that are given to us by the communities that we are in. And those things we have less control over than we perceive and that we think. And again, that realization is not, sounds like a loss of autonomy or a loss of control, but we would argue is actually a loss of chains. That there's an extreme tyranny to this idea that you are responsible for your identity, and that you know there's a weight on you to pick the right identity, whatever that is. There's a freedom in knowing that no, you've been given the best possible identity, and then also, you know, how you're perceived by others is going to be determined by things outside of your control, not necessarily in your control.
Yeah. And so to kind of bring a practical spin to this, I think a way that this could potentially be helpful is, you know, to it's so frequent to hear, especially young people in our culture today, just talking about a feeling of worthlessness and a feeling of insignificance and, you know, like you mentioned, Jonathan, just a lack of control, and therefore that ends up leading to a lack of hope. And I think one of the most fundamental truths that can be brought out from this is that because of the identity that we have in the reality of who God has made us to be and of who God in and of himself is, that we can have hope. We just did a whole episode on this just recently, and we are worth far more than we could possibly understand. We have far greater significance in the eyes of God than we could ever possibly comprehend. And so then what that can empower us to do is then make positive changes in the kinds of people that we can be. And so then, you know, rather than looking in the mirror in the morning and saying, you know, I'm worthless, I'm not going to be able to be productive today, I'm not actually a person of value, you can look at that and still image and say, God has given me worth that is far beyond what I can understand, and he has a plan for me to be able to participate in the work that he has for me. And so out of that, I can be, for example, like I can be a healthier person than I am. I can be a more productive person. You can work towards those things, and that unlocks so many more possibilities for what you can do, because that grounded, core eternal reality is in place. And from there, everything else has far more possibilities to it as far as what you can actually accomplish and do, because you have that foundation to work from.
Well said, David. I would say that understanding of reality is the key of what we're saying here. Are your ideas your identity? They are not. But understanding reality will help you understand your true identity. And that identity is so powerful and so amazing and so deep that it opens up a world of new possibilities and ongoing possibilities that literally is eternal.
Senior year of high school can be one of the most overwhelming and stressful years in a young adult's life, but it doesn't have to be. That's why we created Explore, a program for homeschool seniors that's designed to give them essential skills, experience, and support they need to graduate with confidence. Explore is a coaching program that comes alongside whatever curriculum you're already using and reinforces it with real-world skills courses, helping students learn things like time management, note-taking, and Christian worldview. They can also earn up to 9 college credits through CLEP exams. Explore students also get to attend APEX, Unbound's biggest live student event, where they'll get to meet their coaches and the rest of the Explore students in their class. Throughout the year, they'll deepen connections with those fellow students, get one-on-one coaching from our team, and complete projects related to things they're interested in to help them take all the concepts they've learned and apply them in the real world. If you want to learn more, visit beunbound.us/explore.
David, when was the last time you had to learn something totally new?
Oh, this is going to be a fun one. So I think the most recent one, it's not something totally new, but I have been getting more into cooking and baking recently. So especially since, moving out and living on my own for like the last few years, that has been something that I've had much more incentive to do. And so the way that I started that was, I did when I moved out, I was given very generously a meat smoker. And so I have been thoroughly enjoying using that for the last couple of years, and have been enjoying being able to make things for myself and my wife, and also for everybody else in the area whenever I get a chance to bring something. But more recently, I have been trying to just like make overall improvements to my diet, to just make sure that I'm eating in a more nutritious manner and not just going for what's quick and easy. And so that has involved learning how to cook multiple other different things. And so that has been just an interesting challenge, because that is something that wasn't really a skill that I had a ton of foundation on. I did like a little bit of just like helping my parents cook or bake when I was younger, but just wasn't really something that I had a lot of incentive to do. But now that I'm learning to do it on my own, it's been a fun process to just learn the ins and outs of what it takes to, whether it's, cooking like a specific kind of meat or dish, and just like trying to make sure that all of the different pots are kept at the right heat for making a particular dish, or whether it's you know, baking, understanding what ingredients are going to be suitable and what aren't. The most recent example of this is I tried to make a cookie recipe that was supposed to be a little bit more on the healthy side, and so it actually like used some like
that
protein.
That sounds like
and
an
stuff.
Oxymoron to me, a healthy cookie. So what was the argument for the healthy cookie?
Like, well, basically just that I want to be able to have a sweet treat, but I don't necessarily want it to have a, you know, an astronomical amount of sugar or calories. And so supposedly there are ways around that. And so I wanted to give my hand at that. So I found a recipe that, you know, it ends up using like some protein powder rather than like flour and things like that. But the interesting mistake that I made is that it called for peanut butter as like part of kind of like the binding agent for the dough. And so
you can tell that David started to be a cook here because he's using terms like binding agent. like that's the difference between somebody who procures food for survival and who is into cooking, you know, binding agent. So, okay. So peanut butter was a binding agent.
Listen, I want to make it very clear. That does not come from actually like me fully understanding what that term means. That comes from me reading the paragraph on the recipe and saying peanut butter is important because it is the binding agent, and me going, yes, that sounds important. I should know that. So I went to use that, but the thing that I forgot to recognize or realize was the fact that we in our house stock some fairly natural peanut butter that is just made from peanuts. And you know, which is great. However, that is pretty different composition wise from just, you know, the jar of, you know, Jif peanut butter that you'll find on the stores of your local supermarket.
Yeah, the Jif peanut butter is full of sugar, which is why your healthy cookie didn't say to put sugar in, but the Jif peanut butter gave you a pretty healthy dose of it, my guess is. So.
Right. Well, the thing is, I did not use the Jif peanut butter. I tried to use the healthy peanut butter. And it turns out that that was actually pretty important because the healthy peanut butter doesn't work nearly as well, or rather, nope. It works much better as a binding agent. And
I
so
was
going to
say that there was no binding here, so that's the wrong. You had an enemy agent instead of a binding agent in this case.
Correct. So what I ended up with was much less of a just like malleable dough texture and much more of just like a just like sticky conglomeration of all of the ingredients together. And so what I ended up having to do was just I had the pan and I just like put it all on the pan as just one large sheet. I could not actually form balls of dough. And so it ended up just being kind of this like cake base brownie thing that I was able to cut up. And actually, it turned out OK. It was not actually that bad once I baked it. But there's just been lessons like that have just very much humbled me where I'm, you know, I'm very tempted to think of myself as smart and capable in the things that I am comfortable with. And then I try something like that and just a simple mistake like that will just turn it into an absolute mess. And I just kind of had to chuckle at myself the entire time going, well, this is a good learning experience. And I'm just glad that I didn't burn anything.
Well, David's wife, Molly, is famous for showing up Thursday nights with homemade donuts. And so next Thursday, I'll be looking for the donuts and I'll be looking to see if David has had anything with successful binding agents. So, David, I can't wait to see this newfound skill on display on Thursday nights in the future.
I make no promises, Jonathan. Well, we are continuing our student features here on the podcast with the members of the Unbound National Student Cabinet who are responsible for planning our APEX event. And so this week, I am delighted to be joined by Sophie. So welcome to the podcast. We're glad to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about what you specifically have been working on in terms of getting ready for APEX and prepping for things on the cabinet.
Right, so at the very beginning, I was helping with the speaker team and the content team, sort of working out the schedule, who was coming, what they were supposed to say, that sort of thing, a little bit more specifically. I was on the events team working out what activities people are going to be doing, what we're going to be hosting each night, and the team challenges. Those have been really fun. And then as we moved on, a little bit more detail work has broken us up into different event sub-teams working on those. I've been working on our secret Sunday night project. I'm super excited about that. That's going to be fantastic, even if we're trying to keep it on the down low for now.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot happening. And yeah, as I've talked to some more of cabinet members, lots of secret projects, lots of surprises coming up. So the suspense is definitely building. I'm definitely getting more curious. But yeah, so that sounds like a lot of different things that you've been working on. So tell me about like what you personally feel like you have learned as far as just like skills that you've gained through your time on cabinet, or just like what you've learned about yourself through this whole experience.
Oh, so much. I told Megan, our cabinet advisor, on a one-on-one call a few weeks ago that I didn't expect to walk away with this much knowledge of like how to manage this work on a team so well. There's been like a lot of really exciting things happening, and also a lot of challenges that just comes with working with a group of people on a project like this. But I think we've all really seen a lot of growth in that area, and we're at a point by now where we're able to work with each other really quickly, really well. So
yeah, yeah. Teamwork is so important when there's a group of you that are all working so hard to make an event as big and as amazing as Apex happen. So that's really cool. Well, last but not least, what are you personally most excited for about Apex? What are you most looking forward to?
Overall, I'm really just looking to see these pieces come together. That's going to be super fun. All the different hard work we put into the theme and making that come through and everything. All these events are going to be really, really fun. We have the endeavors spanning the whole length of Apex too. That's going to be fun. Everybody's broken into four color teams and they're all adding points up through all the events they're doing. Those are going to be really cool to see. I'm also just excited to see Sunday night come together. That's really going to be a big moment for me since I put so much work into that.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, there is a lot to be excited about, and we're really excited to see everything come together for Apex Endeavor. So, well, thank you, Sophie, for joining me and for all of your hard work on making Apex Endeavor happen. So we are very excited to see what that's going to look like here in August, and look forward to seeing you and the rest of the cabinet bring all of it together.
Yeah, thank you. I'm looking forward to it, too.
Well, thank you for listening to the Be Unbound podcast this week. I hope that this is helpful. Again, you know, as we chuckle and watch some three-year-olds who have their identities wrapped up in tractors and mowers and planes and all those kinds of things, and we smile because we know they're more than that, then it's also worth backing up and understanding that you do not have to respond to this tyranny of thinking that you have to choose your own identity. You've been given your identity. You are a child of God. You are made in the image of God. And in fact, God himself in the form of Jesus Christ came and died for you. And that is a measure of both your identity and the love that your creator has for you. And that should be enough to inspire, sustain, transform, and give purpose to your life that opens up a literal eternity of possibilities. So as we close this podcast, there is a community that you could join that might, well, that is based on some of these core realities. And that community is the Unbound community, specifically in the Ascend class. And by the time this podcast releases, we will be right up against the final deadline to enroll in Ascend for the fall 2026 academic year. And if you are interested in that, we're not, this is not hyperbole. We're not exaggerating. We're not putting pressure here. We're just stating some reality that this is the time. If you're interested, you need to act quickly now to be able to enroll for this coming year. We have some time and some space left in the class, but both those things now are quite limited. And so if you're interested in that, go to the beunbound.us website to learn more. You will want to schedule an appointment with one of our counselors. A reminder that our counselors are there to help you make a good decision, not just to enroll you in the program. And so they'll ask you questions about what you want to do. And if we can Indeed help you, then they will help you figure out how to enroll in the program. But if you're interested in doing that, you should act quickly. If you do act quickly, then we will look forward to seeing you in Michigan for APEX. We have a really exciting opening event coming up in APEX. Some phenomenally great speakers. You can go to beunbound.us/APEX to look at that. And that will be the kickoff to our year.
And if your student is not quite to the age where they're ready to graduate from high school and figure out what's next, our Equip and Explore programs for 9th through 12th graders, respectively, are also open for enrollment right now, but they will be closing very soon as well. And those are some of the same ideas, some of the same concepts, and they are designed specifically to help high schoolers who are wanting to just take their ideas and their energy and find the practical tools that they need to really be able to excel and be ready for the real world. And so if you want to learn more about those, you should visit beunbound.us/equip and explore, respectively.
Honestly, David, this is the time of year where we're all a little stressed because APEX is right around the corner, but we're all really excited because the beginning of this end year is coming, and we're looking forward to meeting all the new students, reuniting with some of our returning students at APEX, reuniting with tremendous amounts of our alumni coming back and getting ready to kick off the year. And we want you to be part of it, and we don't want you to miss this opportunity. So go to beunbound.us and make sure you schedule an appointment with us quickly to be able to reserve and schedule your spot in the class. And until we see you, hopefully at APEX, be unbound.